Tonight's meal, tilapia surprise with boiled cabbage. Begin cooking steps 1 through 50 now.
Are you kidding me? Making dinner shouldn't feel like doing a 1,000-piece puzzle. With Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals, the hard part's already done. Pre-chopped ingredients, zero stress. Just assemble, bake, and enjoy. No complicated steps, no mountain of dishes. Try Assemble and Bake today. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
FM Talk.
It just was the right time to do it. We had to do it because it's a war. We're losing 300,000 people a year. We don't lose that much in a war, okay, if you look. And we had to do it. But he was in a house that was more like a fortress than a house. It had steel doors. It had what they call a safety space where it's, you know, solid steel all around. He didn't get that space closed. He was trying to get into it, but he got bum rushed so fast that he didn't get into that. We were prepared. We had, you know, massive blow torches and everything else that you need to get through that steel, but we didn't need it. He didn't make it to that area of the house.
President Trump's talking this morning by phone to Fox News about going into Venezuela and arresting Nicolas Maduro, the illegitimate president of Venezuela. And now we have seen an arraignment take place today. Nicolas Maduro and the wife will plead not guilty to the charges. And now we watch the United States court system do what it does. We have lots of questions, which is why we need an expert. And we are so fortunate to have former United States Senator from Missouri, Jim Talent, on the air with us right now. Senator, thank you for being with us today. It's good to have you.
It's good to be with you, Annie. Thank you.
Of course. Well, Happy New Year to you. I would assume that the Happy New Year greetings from Maduro, as I understand it, as he was disembarking his aircraft here in the United States, he seemed to be in some good spirits or something. I don't know. It's kind of bizarre. When you're sitting wherever you were sitting, or when you found out, woke up to, or maybe saw late night reports Friday into Saturday that this was taking place, what is Senator Jim Talent's gut reaction to a moment like that?
A brilliant tactical stroke, one of a number of this administration has done that has opened up the possibility for a real, you know, strategic success. In other words, a success on a higher level, and yet another aspect of a coherent and consistent American foreign policy designed to protect American security, American interests. So obviously, I liked it, and I can't say I was surprised. If anybody who's read the national security strategy understands what are the biggest impulses behind this kind of an operation, and I assume you want to talk about that probably, but
yeah,
it's a very good move. And in terms of the overall scorecard, it's still an incomplete because it depends on what we're able to make out of it in Venezuela, and they're working on that now.
We're speaking with Senator Jim Talent on the arrest of Nicolas Maduro. The number one question that I have for you, because obviously downstream we have all the political reaction. You've got a lot of the people who, the first thing they do in the morning is wake up and hate Donald Trump. So if he did it, they hate it. Why did the Trump administration go to Venezuela and arrest him? Oil? Was it China's relationship with them? Why?
Now that you're getting closer to the, in fact, that's one of the, there are two big objectives here. The one is to interdict and end the direct threat to us of narco-terrorism. And let's define that, Annie. Okay, those are networks of supersized criminal gangs, irregular but powerful armed forces and sovereign states that are using the narcotics trade as a tool of statecraft, as an asymmetric weapon against the people of the United States, to kill our people directly, the president referred to that, and to undermine the social cohesion and to gain for themselves profits, which they then plow back into the plans of our adversaries. And narco-terrorism has risen from a nuisance, 15 years ago, to a problem, and now it is a very substantial threat. And the administration is moving to end it. That's one of the reasons. And the other, and you just referred to it, we are securing our strategic perimeter. It's border control writ large, and we're securing against penetration by foreign adversaries. So Venezuela is the poster child for both of those threats. And therefore, they're moving against Venezuela. And this is a tactic used in it. It's not, you know, it's not victory in and of itself. But it's along with seizing the tankers, blowing up the drug boats, and then the diplomatic campaign that they have been waging against against Venezuela to isolate them and to intimidate them. So, yeah, it is, again, a coherent and purposeful foreign policy with American interests as the objective. It's not about, well, you know, the problem here is that it's been so long since we've actually had a foreign policy with any coherence to it that people don't even have a language to discuss it when they're confronted with one. I know that sounds, you know, my wife would say, get off your high horse, Jim. But I mean, I really think that's the case. And this applies even to the president's friends. I mean, there's a lot of people who support this because Trump is doing it. And I support the president, too. But this is, you know, this is the use of American statecraft to protect America.
So what I hear you saying, and especially in the initial reaction to my question about, is this about the oil? I would assume that the oil is then a positive consequence, a little bit of beneficial collateral damage from the arrest that was made. But I heard that China had a meeting in Venezuela that afternoon, that China was present with a delegation there. What is China, maybe Iran, maybe Russia, what do some of our biggest adversaries want from Venezuela?
They're very upset today about all this. So the Chinese and the Cubans have basically been running, you know, Venezuela, financing it. It's Cuban security agents that have been used to keep the Maduro regime in power. We know the Russians, for example, supplied them with anti-air defenses. We've seen what that was worth, by the way. That's another benefit of this, is it's further exposed, you know, Russian weakness. So what do they want out of it? Well, okay, so let me give you a scenario. So the balloon goes up in the Indo-Pacific. There's an actual kinetic confrontation between the United States and China. Maybe we're at the brink of war. Maybe we're into the initial stages of it. The Chinese want assets in Latin and South America that they can use directly to interdict our Navy. You know, they were trying to get control of the Panama Canal. Remember that? That's one of the first things the Trump administration did, was kick them out of there, because if they have control of that, we can't move our ships through the canal. It's the assets they can use to distract us, to interfere, to attack us from our underbelly. This is what great powers do, is they protect their strategic perimeters. And we've been upset about that. Now, I'm going to put this in a morally neutral way. It's the same reason the Chinese don't like us being in South Korea. They don't like our alliances with Japan, because there we are, right on their borders with assets that we can use against them. So that's the broadest strategic reason. But don't underestimate the importance of getting rid of this narco-terrorism.
Right.
And the Cubans engage in it. The Nicaraguans engage in it. And I'll tell you, the Mexicans play ball with those people, too. And this is a message to all of them. No, you can't just attack. This is an attack on the United States. It's not just, it's wrong to think of this as sort of a criminal justice operation, which is one of the reasons it's so silly that federal judges are thinking of getting involved in this. They have no understanding of these networks and of the threat it represents to the United States. This is inherently an executive function. Although Congress can play if it wants to, this is not a judicial operation here or a criminal justice operation. It has overtones there. We're going to try this guy, and I'm sure they're figuring out how to use that in order to advance our messaging and all this.
We're speaking with former Senator Jim Talent. I was excited that we were able to talk to you today because I have a lot of questions. Certainly don't have the foreign policy expertise that you do to give us some sense as to why and what is going on here. So with the arrest of Nicolas Maduro, some people of course, the Trump detractors always, but there are a lot of people on both sides of the aisle supporting the president and being detractors of the president. The words like Afghanistan, Libya, Iraq start to come up. Regime change, saying that we're not supposed to be the regime change people. We're supposed to be the America First people. Is this regime change? I heard the Trump administration say, no, this is restoration.
Yeah, because they don't want this to get labeled with something that has very negative connotations. Now, is this, I mean, just look at it. Is it regime change? Yeah, I mean, there's been a change in the regime. There's a change anyway in personnel at the top. And the object of this now going forward is to create a transitional government there that will first and foremost play ball with us on the issues that we care about. When I just given them to you, we got to stop the drug trade. And you got to stop being an outpost for our enemies, supplying oil to them, engaging in the, you know, the shadow tanker market and all that to support the Chinese, to support the Iranians. That's going to be our demands. And then we need a government that is capable of governing effectively and stabilizing the country with a view eventually towards having free elections and, you know, getting the country back to what it was before Chavez and Maduro. But our primary purpose there is protecting the interests of the American people. And so in the short term, yeah, we'll play ball if they'll play ball. And you notice, by the way, this whole operation, you know, Trump prepares the information environment. In other words, this takes months. He offers to negotiate. But then at the same time, the stick is behind it, you know, blowing up the drug boats,
yes,
seizing the tankers. And it's all designed to convey a message to adversaries and people in the middle. Look, you know, if you play ball with the United States, you can get something out of it. If you don't, you're going to end up like Maduro or, you know, like the Iranian nuclear program,
right,
or like, you know, the Houthis when they were attacking our shipping, or like Hamas right now, where our ally, Israel, is going after them. So this is great power politics, effectively planned and executed to protect the American people.
Senator Talent, do you, like, how long, the president said at his Mar-a-Lago press conference on Saturday that basically we're going to run Venezuela for the time being.
Yeah.
What is the time being? How long does this last?
And he says, the Maduro, the woman, who's, by the way, a great leader, that he says she's not popular enough. But what he was saying there was she's not capable. There are regime elements still in control of the security forces. We don't know where the army is going to be. So we need a leadership that is capable of staying in power. And it's, you know, it's a practical matter that's going to include some elements of the Maduro, you know, coalition and factions. And, you know, what that's going to look like, you know, we have a man who's out front on this, Marco Rubio, who I can tell you is among elected officials and former elected officials is the expert on Latin and South America. You know, he's up front of this, not an envoy like Witkoff. That's very deliberate because Trump knows the credibility he has in that region. I have a lot of faith in Marco, but this is not going to be easy. But we're in a better position now, no matter what happens. Everybody's sat up again and taken note. You know, you screw with the United States and the American people, and bad things are going to happen to you.
Right.
And that's a really good message to send around the world. The Iranians are more nervous because of this, I can tell you that.
Well, I was going to segue into that because I have a lot of people asking or tweeting about, or I've read about these protests taking place in Iran. And, you know, Senator Talent, I'd love to get your thoughts on what is happening there on the ground in Iran, and how does a move like this, the United States arresting Maduro, affect Iran?
Well, these are major protests. They started over economic issues and among the shopkeeper class because inflation is so bad there. It's like 1.4 million reals to a dollar. But it's spread beyond that now, you know, because of the enormous discontent for political reasons, economic reasons, social reasons. I mean, that regime is hated by its people about as much as any regime around the world. And the Iranian people are sophisticated, you know, people. It used to be a first world country. So it's a major problem for the regime. You know, the issue is, does it have the security forces to put this down? Can it pay them? They really have a problem from a money standpoint. That's why they're lessening the subsidies they're paying, even though they know that causes more discontent. They're running out of money. But most of the people I trust in this area think that the end of the Islamic Republic is inevitable, but is not imminent. Because if you're, you know, the key is going to be, are there leaders in the IRG and the security forces that are willing to pull the trigger on the mullahs? And the supreme leader is like 86 years old. You know, from their perspective, it makes sense to wait for him to die and then make your move. But I don't think the next leader of Iran is going to be a mullah.
Interesting.
I think it'll be probably a military authoritarian. And I'm sure the administration is laying plans right now to say, okay, how can we get that group of people to play ball with us on our objectives in the Middle East? I bet anything there were some discussions between Trump and Netanyahu about that.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't expect anything huge, although you never know. I mean, these regimes, I mean, look at Syria. And he held up for 15 years, and then he was gone in 15 days.
True. When the people in Iran that are protesting right now, are there specific issues? I mean, oppression obviously sucks, but to move in a heavy-fisted, to put it extremely lightly, country the way Iran is ruled right now, to move to the streets and to make a collective and large global message about wanting change, what are the main issues that they're protesting?
Well, some of it is economic. And, you know, when you lose the shopkeeper class, they're normally not very political. That's a major issue for the regime. And they've not, you know, they've not gone around shooting those people. Then, of course, you have the, you know, the students. And then you have the people who are tired of a regime that's not only controlling the politics and economics of the country, but it's telling the women what they can wear. I mean, this kind of social oppression, it's tiresome. And the whole ideology, you know, the religious fanaticism behind the regime, I think is bankrupt. It's played out. You know, it's yesterday's news, and they've had enough of it. But are the security forces going to begin abandoning them? And if they don't, are the people going to be willing to go out en masse and be killed en masse? That's a big ask.
Yeah.
And so could happen. I mean, they're about that fed up. And this whole, you know, look at the last 2 years, all the plans of the Iranian regime, you know, we're going to get a nuclear weapon. We're going to destroy Israel. We've got this proxy network. We're going to control the whole region. It's all up in smoke. You know, and dictators who suffer setbacks like that, you know, about undermining, even on their own terms, they failed, right? Plus which, they're all looking around at each other to see who's a traitor.
Yeah.
Who's really working for Mossad, you know?
Yeah.
Imagine the supreme leader. I mean, he's going from house to house. And then when Trump comes in, this is classic Trump, and says, oh, yeah, we're locked and loaded. He's stirring that up, see?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who knows what he'll do?
How different will the landscape of the world look at the end of Donald Trump's second term?
Well, if it keeps like this, and we haven't even talked about the economy.
Yeah.
Which I'm talking to my friends, I mean, I'm not a businessman, and this economy is taking off. You know, we've got energy, we're going to be an energy powerhouse again, energy prices going down, real wages going up. The year-on-year deficit was down $600 billion. Got all these investments in manufacturing. And I'll tell you why he's doing that. I mean, part of it is that Trump, I think, really, he really cares about, you know, the classic worker. I just think he's very partial to that. But the other reason is, you know, if we're going to protect ourselves going forward, we've got to be able to outproduce other countries. And we're in this conflict now with China, or competition, call it what you want. It's the first time, really, since we became a powerful country that we've had an adversary who can outproduce us.
Hmm.
You know, it's not a good thing.
Will they?
And go ahead.
I was going to say, when it comes to the economics and production with our presence in Venezuela, will the United States benefit from the oil that exists in Venezuela?
Oh, I'm sure that's what Trump intends. And I should say, you know, when I say it's not about oil, the presidents have discretion to elevate some interests into priorities, and it's clear that the president has elevated into a priority investments in the United States and economic opportunities for the United States. It's not, I think, the primary. I mean, we talked about this when he did his Middle East trip, mm-hmm. right? Remember Saudi Arabia and Syria and places like that.
Yes.
But it's a big deal for him. I mean, he's going out recruiting investments and deals that are going to be good for the American economy, and especially our manufacturing and technological base. So, yeah, I mean, and look, if we just have a government that's not a tool of foreign powers in Venezuela and they want to develop their oil industry, what companies are they going to look to? It's American companies.
Right.
We're the leaders in that field. So all we need is a fair playing field. Plus, which they stole a bunch of our company's assets, and we're entitled to compensation for that.
Well, at the end of this president's second term, we'll have highs and lows that we can't even predict at this point, but definitely things are moving very quickly. The president seems to have a goal in mind and the guts to pursue it, and that's been the
case. Talking to reporters at 4:30 in the morning, I think I'm the only person in the United States who doesn't have Donald Trump's cell phone.
Nope, there are two people. I might be the other one. Senator Talent, you're such a pleasure to have here on the show with us with your expertise. When we put out there that we were going to be speaking to you, a lot of our folks, our listeners, were very excited to hear what you had to say. So thank you for being with us today.
Good talking to you. Happy New Year to everybody.
Happy New Year to you as well. Bye-bye. Senator Jim Talent, the former United States Senator from Missouri, former congressman and chairman of the Reagan Institute's National Leadership Council. All right, let's take a break. We're going to speak in a little bit here with Joe Severino. He is a Republican candidate for governor of Illinois. You can go to severinoforgovernor.com and learn a little bit about him. And we'll talk to him about his vision for the state of Illinois and how he intends to win the primary and beat the Democrats in that cobalt blue state of Illinois. From our lips to God's ears. We'll be right back.
I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
It's Minnesota. That's it. And we're not going to pay it anymore. We're going to have Waltz go pay. We're not going to pay them. And we're not going to pay California. And we're not going to pay Illinois with that big slob of a governor that they have that doesn't run. You know, we brought down crime by 25%. He didn't do anything. He's not doing anything. But they want us to leave. He had a day where they had 17 murders not too long ago. 17 murders. And 77 people shot, but 17 died. And then he talks about, we can handle it. He can't handle it. But we pull back, and we'll go in at the appropriate time. But we're the ones that brought the crime down. We brought it down 20%. They didn't bring it down. Pritzker didn't bring it down.
President Trump from Air Force One there saying unkind but true things about Governor J.B. Pritzker of Illinois. Unlike Tim Walz, who was going to run for a third term for governor in Minnesota, who today announced that he is no longer running. I suspect it's because of all of the fraud that's being uncovered there, but we'll wait to see. J.B. Pritzker, in his king-like fashion, wants to continue to rule over you, Illinois residents and taxpayers. And he wants and is running for a third term for governor. And frankly, if you're like me or Ryan or Brad, we're sick of it. And we need somebody else who can win, who can beat J.B. Pritzker to take the mantle up for the Republicans and try to win the people's vote. Joe Severino joins us here. He's a Republican candidate for governor of Illinois, severinoforgovernor.com. Joe, welcome to the Annie Fry Show. It's a pleasure to have you on with us. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here and great to meet everyone.
Yeah, you as well. So I think if I recall correctly, the bio on your X profile says the presumptive nominee for the Republican governor of the state of Illinois. You feel confident yeah. about your ability to win the primary and I presume beat J.B. Pritzker this November. Talk to me about how you plan to do that for Illinois.
Well, absolutely. I am their presumptive nominee. They're trying to object to my petitions now to remove me from the ballot. Everything you've seen that happened to Donald Trump, arrest me as a father of five, married 25 years, a political candidate. It's just been atrocious to be involved in Illinois politics. It's more of an insulation of J.B. Pritzker rather than get a good individual elected to kind of set the state on a new trajectory. So I'm fighting. So I'm fighting because I care about Illinois. I see the atrocities that are occurring here to our families. No one's thriving. Business is being decimated. Taxes are out of control. Everything that's in my biography and wheelhouse, including my lieutenant governor, is going to set the Illinois, set the stage so that we can beat J.B. Pritzker. We need somebody that's electable, not somebody that can just get through the nomination process. That's step one. But who is actually going to be able to go on the world stage and beat J.B. Pritzker? And that's where I come in. I'm going to be able to battle him by biography, experience, and this is a guy, people call him, Jelly Belly. They say that, the big sloppy government, just like Donald Trump. And I'm not saying I don't disagree. However, at the end of the day, he still shows up. He's a Northwestern trained attorney, as well as a two-time incumbent. This man knows how to win elections and he has the finances to do it. So we need somebody who's rigid in conservative values that can also resonate with the general populace and, give people confidence and that we can, if you get behind the right candidate, we can beat them. And I believe I'm the candidate that's going to do that. Resonating throughout the state, every age from 17 first-time voters to, geriatrics, from white, black, LGBTQ, it doesn't matter who it is, they like the message. It's a populist message without sacrificing values, and it's resonating very well.
Well, let's talk about who Joe Severino is, what your experience is, and what brings you to the place where you're like, I think I could run Illinois certainly better than J.B. Pritzker. Tell us about yourself.
So essentially, I grew up in Cicero, Illinois, which is a very difficult place to grow up. And I don't say this in a braggadocious way, and I don't say it in an exaggerated way. Literally fighting every day of my life, bloody knuckle, battles in the street. It's just par for the course when you come from those areas. And after being horrifically bullied, I started fighting. I was offered then to fight professionally at 18 years old, which I chose not to do. But I still have the fighter spirit. And after that, I was a young entrepreneur. I started a parking company with one single location. I grew it into the largest singly owned multifaceted hospitality company in Illinois. I was getting ready to sell it during COVID to private equity because we were kind of an essential service, but we couldn't, come in contact, at hotels, hospitals, et cetera. In hospitality venues. It decimated my revenues. I was getting ready to sell it. We put it on the back burner to private equity, one of the largest in the nation. And I decided to run for Congress. And therein is where I realized how truly corrupt Illinois politics are on both sides of the aisle. Everybody points the finger at the Democrats, but they don't realize there's an actual machine here at work. And because the Democrats control everything, there are crumbs available for Republicans, this uniparty that exists. And what they're doing is just to be relevant or to profit in any capacity, they're doing business with these Democrats and it's leaving people behind. And I refuse to be part of that problem. So I'm running almost collaterally to the Illinois GOP. It's the voice of the people with authentic Republican values and people are inspired by it.
So it sounds like you have as much problem with the Illinois Republican Party as you do the Democrat Party. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. And it's because it's like they're almost like Hillary Clinton, where, there's no dirt on me. They don't have dirt. There's things in my past that they might try to create. However, there's nothing that would cause the public to turn on me from a candidate perspective. But the reality is they all have dirt on each other. And I was privately calling out their dirt, telling them, listen, we can do things differently here if you want to win elections. And when they would deliberately operate antithetically to what their goals are or what they're holding themselves out to promise, including life. We have pro-life leaders that are supporting pro-abortionist candidates. We have Second Amendment leaders that are sponsoring gun grabbers. We have to draw a line now and actually represent the people, and that's what I'm professing to do.
Joe, this is Ryan Wiggins, Illinois voter. We all are.
Hi, Ryan.
I would say my number one issue is who can beat J.B. Pritzker. And I want to
Right.
know what your plan is past the primary in a general election to beat J.B. Pritzker.
So here's a few things, and let me finish with my biography, and I'd be glad to answer that. So after starting my company 25 years, I also went to Harvard Business School. I was accepted into the OPM program where I studied over a 3-year period, actual Harvard alum in Boston, and with 177 global leaders. Went to law school, passed the California baby bar. I was made famous with Kim Kardashian. She couldn't pass it. All while having a family and running my business full throttle. Not to mention, I started a children's foundation, which I funded and founded to benefit children's hospitals. I've been giving back for a very long time. A lot of people in politics don't give back. They just want to take. And it's very hard to be someone who was philanthropic or is philanthropic to stand on the sidelines and watch, just the takers show. And that's why I'm running. But to answer the question beyond the primary, what I'm doing is we have my lieutenant governor, if I can tell you a little bit about his biography. He was a C-level executive with Chase Manhattan Bank, a C-level executive with ExxonMobil, with Chase Manhattan and JP Morgan at different times. He was sat on the Basel Act, which for the Department of Treasury he chaired. So he would testify in front of Congress, cabinet members, and Senate figures for a very long time. He was going to be one of the individuals that they selected for the National DOGE program. He's a brilliant, sophisticated, fiscally responsible individual that can lead us better from a fiscal standpoint, and that's primarily why I selected him. I didn't go for the regular, oh, it has to be, a minority woman from the other end of the state, et cetera. It's like, who's the most competent to lead Illinois? And that's why I selected him. And what he would do is nationally, he would audit banks on the Basel Act. What they did is to ensure that they were audited, they were compliant while they transacted internationally. So his name is Rand Jisquith, just a brilliant guy, very vigorous older man that wants to see Illinois heal from a fiscal perspective. So he's joining me. But what we're going to do is we're eliminating property taxes and we're putting out a position paper on how that's going to happen. We're going to repatriate all this private equity money that's left Illinois, our parking meters, skyways. There's so much money that has left our border that's putting a greater burden on our taxpayers. We're going to bring that back. We have an idea and a plan to repatriate our seniors that have left. These pensioners that have left in the southern end of the state, where it's, from a climate perspective, we can bring them back and repatriate them where they won't be paying property taxes here. We want to prevent people, stop the bleeding now, prevent people from leading with a confident path forward. And that's exactly what we're going to do it. And we're doing it from a human perspective. What a lot of these candidates don't realize is that from an actualization perspective and connecting with the people or emotional intelligence, they wonder how did a radical nut job like Mondami get elected in New York? I understand people had issues with Cuomo, myself. I understand this. However, the reason a Mondami gets elected is because he has emotional intelligence to connect with people. Right now, people aren't angry, they're hurt. So you need somebody that can tap into the human psyche and give confidence to people that have been sitting on the sideline that feel aggrieved and re-inspire them to come out and vote. And with that kind of excitement, we're going to be able to put forth the plans that we have for the state because we'll have the people behind us.
So we're speaking with Joe Severino, severinoforgovernor.com. You mentioned eliminating property taxes. We've had several comments on our YouTube live broadcast as you've been speaking here, first asking you what you were going to do for property taxes because they are out of control. And a second one, a follow-up from another person who said, you know, how do you replace the revenue that is coming in for property taxes? The economic hole that the state of Illinois in is so egregious that if you try to fix something one place, something else is going to break another place. But my question to you is, you've got policies, you've got plans, it sounds like. You're likely also going to have a supermajority of Democrats in the General Assembly. If that wanes a little bit, you'll still not have a majority of Republicans. How are you going to govern, and what would you do as governor while you've got Democrats in Springfield to still benefit the people of the state of Illinois?
And here's what it is. People refer back to Rauner. Rauner couldn't, you know, be effective. He was the last Republican governor to get elected. It's because he was managing a portion of the teachers union money. He would have stepped on his own toes if he kind of barnstormed or blazed a trail at the Capitol. I said, I'm not going to reach across the aisle. There is no working with Democrats. People don't understand.
The Democrats don't even talk to the Republicans. They don't get the budget. They completely leave them in the cold.
Yeah, they manage every mechanism of power. You need a bold leader that can go in there with executive order that knows how to use the law to muck them up and to navigate and get things accomplished. And that's exactly what I intend on doing. I said I'm not reaching across the aisle. I'm reaching into the inkwell, just like J.B. Pritzker does. And then he throws the onus on the aggrieved to fight. Well, the good news is in politics, there's so many scoundrels. When you have the instinct and the experience to leverage the interest of Democrats and what they need, and through an executive order, you can get things accomplished. I'm not beholden to anybody but the taxpayer. I say it's my name on the ballot, but their voice. So it's easy to navigate through an executive order perspective.
We're speaking to Joe Severino, severinoforgovernor.com, for you to do your research and to learn a little bit more. Last question before we let you go and have to go to a break. Joe, of course, you're talking to the Metro East down here across the river from St. Louis, southern Illinois, certainly. We've got a purple county in Madison County that's gone a little bit more red. St. Clair County is one of few that votes blue in this state when we see counties actually going blue. What do you need from southern Illinois to beat J.B. Pritzker, and what are you going to do for southern Illinois to earn it?
I need them to believe in a candidate. There is no belief. And especially running, I'm learning as to why people don't believe when you meet some of the people and you realize the corruption that's involved here. And it's on both sides of the aisle. The reality is, I need them to be inspired. I need them on March 17th to come out and vote for me. If they get me through that nomination process, you will have a defender that's going to fight for Illinois. The CCP is controlling Republican elections right now. People don't know that. The consultant class, the corruption, there's so much going on that they're all remaining silent about. Right now in McHenry County, they're trying to put another lithium battery factory, and it has Republicans coalescing around it to get this done while they sit to on the sidelines that they're so, it's outrageous that they're putting it there. They're all profiting. Same thing with these consultants. We have beautiful Republican volunteers that are banging doors, passing out literature, trying to get good people elected with the belief that our leadership are bringing the greatest people along. That's not the case. Ted Dabrowski's running. He has the entire consultant class behind him. The consultant class is managed by Richard Porter, Mark Kirk, and they're doing business with the Chinese Communist Party. Mark Kirk is a lobbyist for the CCP, literally wholly funded, $400,000 a year. You can look at it in Politico. We're living in a surveillance state right now. They're leaving me out of government for governor forums because I'm outing everybody along the way. I am going to air the dirty laundry so people no longer believe a false narrative and are inspired to do something differently, because it's not the Democrats holding us back. It's a section of this uniparty Republicans that are rigging primaries. Look no further than trying to get me off the ballot or these consultants that represent them.
Well, we appreciate your time today, giving you an opportunity to introduce yourself in your own words to our audience here in the Illinois Metro East. You're listening to Joe Severino, severinoforgovernor.com, Republican candidate for governor of the state of Illinois. Joe, thank you for visiting with us today. It was good to have you with us.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. It was my pleasure.
Take care. Happy New Year. Bye-bye. Joe Severino, Severino for Governor. A quick break here. And when we come back, let's catch up on the YouTube live chat poll. Do you agree with President Trump's action to arrest Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro? Yes or no? Now we've had three candidates for governor for the state of Illinois. I think we've got another one coming up here later in January, revisiting with others as well. Love to get your feedback on the candidates that we have on here, who you loved, who you didn't. 314-241-9797. Text us about that YouTube poll if you so choose. President Trump's actions to arrest Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro, yes or no? What do you think? We'll be right back.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
All right, so that YouTube live chat poll, Ryan, we'll do some texts from people here in a bit once when we get a few of those lined up. 314-241-9797. Do you agree with President Trump's action to arrest Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro, yes or no? Earlier in the show, Ryan predicted 80% of our audience would say yes, and Brad said about 60% would. Brad, what was your initial reaction to the news?
I was shocked first to see it going on. I just turned off a movie that I was watching, and it was like 1 a.m, and I'm like, oh my gosh, we're going to war in Venezuela. So it was shock and apprehension. But whenever I heard that they had captured Maduro live, I was stunned and intrigued because I was wondering what that could possibly mean. And like Ryan mentioned a little bit there, talking about voter fraud, because, you know, why wouldn't you just take him out? But there's a lot to it. I was super excited about it.
You know, Ryan, at New Year's Eve, we were some random conversation over the course of hours of hanging out with some friends. And I talk about my Democrat friend who talks politics with me quite a bit. And he brought this up. He's super, I'm not going to say he's super left, but he's super into politics from the left side of the aisle.
Okay.
But he brought up the Shane Gillis impersonation of Donald Trump talking about the death of Soleimani.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's like,
died like a dog.
Died like a dog. And the funny thing, I like, we talked about how funny it is because all Shane Gillis is doing is saying what Trump said, like Trump said it. Mm-hmm. Like it's when Donald Trump engages in some sort of endeavor like the Soleimani hit or the arrest of Maduro, like, you just know when you hear about it from him, it's not going to be straighten your tie. I mean, Marco Rubio was kind of that. And, you know, I think it's a little dangerous in a pro power move kind of way for people to look at you and be like, they're kind of crazy. I don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah, it keeps people off, keeps people on their toes and on their heels.
Did anybody look at Joe Biden and go, I don't know what he's going to do. I'm a little worried.
No, he's super predictable. So that's what Trump brings.
Well, and what Joe Biden was going to do was nothing.
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 You never know what Trump's going to do.
And I quote, one single word, don't.
Yeah.
Brad quotes it.
Thanks. Don't.
I
the
just,
cartels were like, okay, we won't.
And during the primary, he was like, do come.
Yeah, right.
It's like you're sending mixed messages here. I pay attention to the news, but then sometimes I kind of like, when I'm watching the press conference, I like hide behind my couch and I just peek over to watch Donald Trump do what he's going to do. I'm like, oh God, oh gosh, here we go, here we go. And then months later, Shane Gillis is impersonating the verbatim words that the president said, and you're like, this is really funny. Died like a dog. Ugh. Go vote in the poll. Do you agree with Trump's action to arrest Venezuelan President Maduro? Yes or no? We'll be right back.